How's everyone's week been? Oh, yeah. Who said that? Oh, yeah. I like that. Have you been able to see Jesus walking with you? So a couple of weeks ago, Brendan talked about Peter using the word Babylon to describe the ways of this world. Have you interacted with Babylon this week as a representation of Jesus? That's a question I want to explore this morning as we continue through our look at 1 Peter. So we're starting from chapter 2, verse 11, if you want to turn on or turn to your Bibles and just follow through with me throughout the day. And I know I'm about to use an illustration, and I've used it before, and I kind of apologise, but I kind of don't, because it's just perfect for today's message. So perfect that someone came to me last week and said, I've read your passage for next week, and you need to use this illustration. So recently Disney have taken over Star Wars franchise, and they've released a show called The Mandalorian. And it's about an exiled man, a man who is in exile from his land, his people. And it's about him living that life in the universe. Because Mandalorians are a people of creed. And the creed is referred to throughout the whole of the Star Wars canon, and those of us who love Star Wars are now seeing it all over the place as well. But what we know is that Mandalore is not a race of people. It's a creed to live by. Wherever a Mandalorian is in the universe, they are to live according to the way. It involves acting justly and protecting innocent beings. This is the premise of the whole show, because the Mandalorian in the show is a bounty hunter, and he is fine with catching criminals. And he is fined for taking money for catching the criminals who have escaped around the universe. But one of his captures is a little baby creature that was called Baby Yoda for a long time. But his name is Grogu. And he has trouble with this because Grogu is not a criminal. And so the premise of the show is how does he live up to his creed and not just take the money for this innocent being. It's honour-based. If a Mandalorian makes an agreement, he must fulfil it. It's seen as the ultimate way to live. Mando says to a fellow Mandalorian, there is only one way, the way of Mandalore. And there's a subgroup of Mandalorians that have a strict dress code. They believe that you need to have the helmet on at all times. But I hope you can see, even just by my short explanation there, that there's so many parallels with what it means to be an exile and live the life of an exile in a hostile world. It is possible that I talk about Star Wars too much. But, oh yeah, again. I really do see this character as what we are supposed, how we are supposed to live. The planet Mandalore has been destroyed, and his people were scattered across the universe, but Mando has to live as a subject of Mandalore. We Christians are living as exiles in this world. The world is not our home, as Larry Norman used to sing. We're citizens of God's kingdom, not Babylon. And there will come a time when a new city of God will descend on earth, and God will take his rightful place as king. But until then, we're living in territory that's hostile to the way. But we are to live according to the way of Christ while we're in Babylon. I want to show you a short clip right now from the Bible Project guys, John and Tim. They have a way of taking really complex ideas and explaining it so my simple mind can understand it. If you're online, there should be a link in the comments. At the very least, Google The Way of the Exile Bible Project. But thank you. So if you haven't watched Bible Project before, don't, because I want to keep using it. No. Go and search. There are so many videos that they've done and so much you can listen to. I found this perspective really helpful, especially when reading these passages that I'm going to read now. And they alluded to it in the video. Because Peter says here in this passage, submit ourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. Because Paul says almost the same thing in Romans 13, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves." It seems pretty clear, doesn't it? Peter and Paul are teaching that we should obey the government. But I think there's something else going on, and the mulleted Jesus, bald head and the long hair, interesting take on Jesus. But he said these things in the video and in the teaching of Jesus. It says, it's fine to pay taxes to Caesar, give back his coins. But don't mistake Caesar for God, because God deserves your total life and allegiance. Jesus was teaching that there's a way to live in this world without unnecessarily causing conflict with the ruling powers, while at the same time obeying God's commands. Peter uses two examples of his Babylon in which he lives. There was a strong tradition of slave ownership, and there was strict rules about the roles of women. And we need to be careful not to jump too quickly from Peter describing his Babylon to equate that Babylon to our 21st century Babylon in Australia. In preparing for this message, I read a couple of commentaries, one by an Asian author and one by an African author, because Asian Babylon is different to us, and African Babylon is different to us, and they're all different from Peter's Babylon. But what I loved was the Asian commentator, he equated this to an old Hindi proverb which says, if you live in water, don't make an enemy of the crocodile. Makes sense, doesn't it? I loved it. And he goes on to say, Christians have to live in a community and must not needlessly antagonize others. The African author writes, the application of these instructions to contemporary Africa can be difficult. In interpreting Peter's calls for submission, contemporary Africans need to consider the impact of patriarchy and oppressive tendencies. These verses should not be used to justify oppression or to permit the continuation of situations where human rights of others are undermined. In Australia, we live in a democracy, which is probably different to both the Asian and the African situation. And that gives us so much more opportunity to speak into how our country is run. On the whole, for us to live in Australia today, we can easily obey the authorities without much conflict with our Christian faith. Okay, I will grant you that there are areas of justice that we need to fight for. But if we're in fact living under the life of the rule of Christ, our behaviour should be consistent with his rule, not the rule of Babylon. How does his rule impact the way we steward our money? How we pay our taxes? Give Caesar his coins. Or obey the road rules? Do we put a little fish sticker on the back of our car and then cut in front of everybody? Does it impact the way we treat those around us? Or how we leave the beach or the bushwalking track when we leave? We are little temples. We are living stones. Little places where heaven meets earth. In the big things and in the small things, we need to act with integrity because we are representing Christ and his kingdom. What view of Jesus does the world get if they see us acting out of selfish gain or even behaving questionably? But there may be times, like for Daniel and his friends, where the governing powers in our world ask us to do something that stands against our true king. This is what Peter says when that happened. So Jewish leaders ordered Peter to stop preaching. And Peter just said, we must obey God rather than human beings. And you can find that in Acts 5. And at the end of Romans, in Romans 15, Paul, quoting Isaiah, says, the root of Jesse will spring up, one who will rule over the nations. In him the Gentiles will hope. Doesn't sound too bad, does it? But the root of Jesse he's referring to is our stick man from Matthew 2. He's the real king. And this true king is coming back. And when he does, Rome, or Babylon, will be no more. This is really subversive. The power of Rome is limited. Rome did not see it that way. This view obviously didn't go down very well when Paul wrote it. And after being imprisoned in Rome for a couple of years, you can read the story for yourself at the end of Acts, Paul was beheaded by the emperor for his views. In a democracy, disobeying is often a good way for us to effect change. But here's the caution. Even in a democracy, and while we have the examples of Peter, Paul and John and countless others through church history who have disobeyed, if we do disobey governing authorities, we can expect to receive the punishment from the authorities. Sometimes God intervenes, Daniel in the fire, absolutely. But that's an exception to the rule. Many times, Christians have suffered severe punishments. Nathaniel, my namesake, was skinned alive by being dragged behind a chariot. Peter was crucified upside down. Do you want more? I can keep on going. If, however, we disobey our government for selfish reasons or for trivial reasons, we may be communicating the wrong thing. And worse, we would be disobeying Christ by doing this for selfish gain. So we can respond to the powers by submitting and becoming part of the system. And I can understand that Peter and Paul might sound like they're saying this. Or we can overtly disobey and stand against, in opposition to worldly powers. And again, I can see the New Testament writers indicating this. But I think this third way, the way of quiet subversiveness, by living such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God. This is the way of the exile. It enables us to impact our communities quietly and at peace with the governing authorities while also standing firm on what God's commanded. On the Sunshine Coast in Australia, this will look different to what people in Africa have to do, what people in Asia have to do, even what people in America have to do, a country that might seem similar to Australia. This may involve building rapport with our local parliamentarians, discussing with them how you see the Bible impacting our lives. I don't think writing nasty emails to them or yelling at them from the street is going to cause the change that you might want. It might mean serving the community quietly and without expectation of return, being Jesus, showing the love of Jesus to this world. And it might mean disobedience to unjust laws or mandates, signing petitions and attending protests. I don't know. But if we choose to do these things, we must show integrity and accept the punishments that may come our way. The other side to all of this is that we as Christians might find ourselves in positions of power, positions of authority. Peter alludes to it in this verse, in verse 7. He says, "Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partners and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers." Thank you, Donnie, for giving me this passage. Or was it Brendan? Thank you, somebody. If we ever find ourselves in positions of authority, we are to never abuse that position. While this verse talks to the relationship between husbands and wives, we need to be careful in our application of Peter's Babylon to Australia's Babylon. Women are not weaker partners in Australia. While there may still be room for improvement, a woman does not need to be married in Australia in order to participate in society. Women are equal partners in Australia, equal in ability and qualifications. That's not so in other parts of the world, where a woman's identity is heavily tied to her husband. There may be other examples which hit a little bit closer to home for us in Australia, for power imbalance. How we treat others in our work environments, maybe. If we're managers, if we've moved up the line, how do we treat those at the bottom? What about how we talk to people who serve us at the restaurant? And what's amazing is, even in our Babylon in the Western world, there's a legend of a different way. An individual who lives differently to that ladder climbing and oppression of the world. So there's a quote that's out there that says something like this: "You can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him." So there's a legend out there of this kind of person. And there's so many different versions of this quote. But this person might exist. This person is living the way of the exile. I believe we are to be this person. We're about to walk out of this building in a few minutes. And when we do, we are exiles. In a world that is full of idols, systems, and ideologies that are not the way. How are we going to live this third way, the way of the exile? How are we going to live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God, while also remaining loyal to the true King? On Friday night, we had youth group here, and we decided to do the talk before the messy games outside. And I sat with a group up the back, and they were all 16 or 17-year-olds. And when we talked about how to respond as Christians in our world, one of the girls said something like, and I'm paraphrasing, "We have to choose our battles. If we get angry about everything, then people won't listen to the really important things." And it was a great discussion. I wish you could all have been a fly on the wall for that discussion. But they all agreed that there are times we need to stand up for others and for the things we believe. In other words, they understood this way of the exile. 16 and 17 years old. I'm just getting my head around it now at 43. Our future is in good hands. Like the Mandalorian, we are to live the way of Jesus, and this won't be easy. It will go against the ways of this world at times, and we need to be followers of the way.